the foundry, which I had not done before in the evening. Still, I have not recovered my whole voice or strength. Perhaps I never may, but let me use what I have. Persecuting the Methodists. Monday, September 9. I preached at Charlton, a village 6 miles from Taunton, to a large congregation gathered from the towns and country for miles around. All the farmers here had some time before entered into a joint engagement to turn all out of their service and give no work to anyone who went to hear a Methodist preacher. But there is no counsel against the Lord. One of the chief of them, Mr. G., was not long after convinced of the truth and desired those very men to preach at his house. Many of the other Confederates came to hear, whom their servants and laborers gladly followed. So the whole device of Satan fell to the ground, and the word of God grew and prevailed. Wednesday, October 2nd, I walked to Stoll's Sarum, which, in spite of common sense, without house or inhabitants, still sends 2 members to the Parliament. It is a large round hill encompassed with a broad ditch, which, it seems, has been of considerable depth. At the top of it is a cornfield, in the midst of which is another round hill, about 200 yards in diameter, encompassed with a wall and a deep ditch. Probably before the invention of cannon, this city was impregnable. Troy was, but now it is vanished away and nothing left but the stones of emptiness. Thursday the 3rd, I rode to Reading and preached in the evening. Observing a warm man near the door, he was once of the society, I purposely bowed to him, but he made no return. During the first prayer, he stood, but sat while we sang. In the sermon, his countenance changed, and in a little while, he turned his face to the wall. He stood at the second hymn and then kneeled down. As I came out, he caught me by the hand and dismissed me with a hearty blessing. Friday the 4th, I came to London. On Monday the 7th, I retired to a little place near Hackney, formerly a seat of Bishop Bonner's. How are the times changed, and still bearing his name. Here I was as in a college. Twice a day we joined in prayer. The rest of the day, allowing about an hour for meals and another for walking before dinner and supper, I spent quietly in my study. Wesley's Prescriptions, 1755, Monday, April 7th, Wednesbury. I was advised to take the Derbyshire Road to Manchester. We waited at a house 6 miles beyond Lichfield. Observing a woman sitting in the kitchen, I asked, "Are you not well?" and found she had just been taken ill, being on her journey, with all the symptoms of an approaching pleurisy. She was glad to hear of an easy, cheap, and almost infallible remedy, a handful of nettles boiled in a few minutes and applied warm to the side. While I was speaking to her, an elderly man, pretty well dressed, came in. Upon inquiry, he told us he was traveling, as he could, toward his home near Hounslow, in hopes of agreeing with his creditors, to whom he had surrendered his all. But how to get on he knew not, as he had no money and had caught a tertian ague. I hope a wise providence directed this wanderer also, that he might have a remedy for both his maladies. Monday the 14th, I rode by Manchester, where I preached about 12, to Warrington. At 6 in the morning, Tuesday the 15th, I preached to a large and serious congregation, and then went on to Liverpool, one of the neatest, best-built towns I have seen in England. I think it is fully twice as large as Chester. Most of the streets are quite straight. 2/3 of the town, we were informed, have been added within these 40 years. If it continues to increase in the same proportion, in 40 years more, it will nearly equal Bristol. The people in general are the most mild and courteous I ever saw in a seaport town, as indeed appears by their friendly behavior, not only to the Jews and Papists who live among them, but even to the Methodists, so-called. The preaching house is a little larger than that at Newcastle. It was thoroughly filled at 7 in the evening, and the hearts of the whole congregation seemed to be moved before the Lord and before the presence of His power. Wesley and the Sunshine. Thursday the 24th, we rode in less than 4 hours the 8 miles, so-called, to Newell Hay from Bolton. Just as I began to preach, the sun broke out and shone exceedingly hot on the side of my head. I found that if it continued, I should not be able to speak long, and lifted up my heart to God. In a minute or two it was covered with clouds, which continued till the service was over. Let any who please call this chance. I call it an answer to prayer. Friday the 25th, about 10 I preached near Todd Morden. The people stood row upon row on the side of the mountain. They were tough enough in outward appearance, but their hearts were as melting wax. One can hardly conceive anything more delightful than the vale through which we rode from hence. The river ran through the green meadows on the right. The fruitful hills and woods rose on either hand. At 3 in the afternoon, I preached at Heptonstill on the brow of the mountain. The rain began almost as soon as I began to speak. I prayed that if God saw best, it might be stayed till I had delivered his word. It was so, and then began again. But we had only a short stage to Ewood. Tuesday, May 6th. Our conference began at Leeds. The point on which we desired all the preachers to speak their minds at large was whether we ought to separate from the church. Whatever was advanced on one side or the other was seriously and calmly considered, and on the third day we were all fully agreed in that general conclusion that, whether it was lawful or not, it was no ways expedient. Monday the 12th, we rode, my wife and I, to North Allerton. Wednesday the 21st, I preached at Nafferton near Horsley, about 13 miles from Newcastle. We rode chiefly on the new western road which lies on the old Roman wall. Some part of this is still to be seen, as are the remains of most of the towers, which were built a mile distant from each other, quite from sea to sea. But where are the men of renown who built them, and who once made all the land tremble, crumbled into dust, gone hence to be no more seen till the earth shall give up her dead? June 2nd, we rode to Thirsk, where I met the little society, and then went on to York. The people had been waiting for some time, so I began preaching without delay and felt no want of strength, though the room was like an oven through the multitude of people. Saturday the 7th. One of the residentiaries sent for Mr. Williamson, who had invited me to preach in his church, and told him, "Sir, I abhor persecution, but if you let Mr. Wesley preach, it will be the worse for you." He desired it nevertheless, but I declined. Perhaps there is a providence in this also. God will not suffer my little remaining strength to be spent on those who will not hear me, but in an honorable way. The room was like an oven. Sunday the 8th. We were at the Minster in the morning and at our parish church in the afternoon. The same gentleman preached at both, but though I saw him at the church, I did not know I had ever seen him before. In the morning he was all life and motion. In the afternoon he was as quiet as a post. At 5 in the evening the rain constrained me to preach in the oven again. The patience of the congregation surprised me. They seemed not to feel the extreme heat or to be offended at the close application of those words, "Thou art not far from the kingdom of God." Mark 12:34. Monday the 16th, I preached in the evening at Nottingham, and on Thursday afternoon reached London. From a deep sense of the amazing work which God has of late years wrought in England, I preached in the evening on those words, Psalm 147:20, "He hath not dealt so with any nation." No, not even with Scotland or New England. In both these God has made bare his arm, yet not in so astonishing a manner as among us. This must appear to all who impartially consider, 1, the number of persons on whom God has wrought, 2, the swiftness of his work in many, both convinced and truly converted in a few days, 3, the depth of it in most of these, changing the heart as well as the whole conversation, 4, the clearness of it, enabling them boldly to say, "Thou hast loved me, thou hast given thyself for me," 5, the continuance of it. Tuesday the 24th in London. Observing in that valuable book, Mr. Gillis' Historical Collections, the custom of Christian congregations in all ages to set apart seasons of solemn thanksgiving, I was amazed and ashamed that we had never done this, After all the blessings we had received, and many to whom I mentioned it gladly agreed to set apart a day for that purpose. This is no mazed man. Sunday, August 31st, at 5 I preached in Gwinnett to several thousands, but not one of them light or inattentive. After I had done, the storm arose and the rain poured down till about 4 in the morning. Then the sky cleared, and many of them that feared God gladly assembled before him. Monday, September 1st, I preached at Penryn, so abundantly more that the house could contain. Tuesday the 2nd, we went to Falmouth. The town is not now what it was 10 years since. All is quiet from one end to the other. I had thoughts of preaching on the hill near the church, but the violent wind made it impracticable, so I was obliged to stay in our own room. The people could hear in the yard likewise in the adjoining houses, and all were deeply attentive. Wednesday, September 3rd, after preaching again to a congregation who now appeared ready to devour every word, I walked up to Pendennis Castle, finely situated on the high point of land which runs out between the bay and the harbor and commanding both. It might easily be made exceedingly strong, but our wooden castles are sufficient. In the afternoon, we rode to Helstone, once turbulent enough, but now quiet as Penryn. We reached at 6 on a rising ground about a musket shot from the town. Two drunken men strove to interrupt, but one soon walked away and the other leaned on his horse's neck and fell fast asleep. About noon, Friday the 5th, I called on W. Rowe in Brieg in my way to Newland. 12 years ago, he said, I was going over Gull Hole Downs, and I saw many people together. I asked what was the matter, and they told me a man was going to preach. I said, nay, this is no mazed man. You preached on God's raising the dry bones, and from that time I could never rest till God was pleased to breathe on me and raise my dead soul. Slandering Wesley in the pulpit. I had given no notice of preaching here, but seeing the poor people flock from every side, I could not send them empty away. So I preached at a small distance from the house and besought them to consider our great high priest who has passed through into the heavens, Hebrews 4:14. And none opened his mouth, for the lions of Brieg, too, are now changed into lambs. That they were so fierce 10 years ago is no wonder, since their wretched minister told them from the pulpit 7 years before I resigned my fellowship that John Wesley was expelled the college for a base child and had been quite mazed ever since, that all the Methodists at their private societies put out the lights, and so on, with abundance more of the same kind. But a year or two since, it was observed, he grew thoughtful and melancholy, and about 9 months ago he went into his own necessary house and hanged himself. Saturday the 6th. In the evening I preached at St. Chest. Except at Gwinnett, I have seen no such congregation in Cornwall. The sun, nor could we contrive it otherwise, shone full in my face when I began the hymn, but just as I ended it, a cloud arose, which covered it till I had done preaching. Is anything too small for the providence of Him by whom our very hairs are numbered? Sunday the 7th. Last year, a strange letter written at Penzance was inserted in the public papers. Today I spoke to the two persons who occasioned that letter. They are of St. Just Parish, sensible men, and no Methodists. The name of the one is James Tregear, the other is Thomas Sackerley. I received the account from James 2 or 3 hours before Thomas came, but there was no material difference. In July was 12 months, they both said, as they were walking from St. Just Church Town toward St. Creed. Thomas happened to look up, cried out, James, look, look. What is that in the sky? The first appearance, as James expressed it, was three columns of horsemen, swiftly pressing on as in a fight, from southwest to northeast, a broad streak of sky being between each column. Sometimes they seemed to run thick together, then to thin their ranks. Afterward they saw a large fleet of three-masted ships in full sail toward the Lizard Point. This continued above a quarter of an hour. Then, all disappearing, they went on their way. The meaning of this if it was real, which I do not affirm, time can only show. Extraordinary coincidence. Saturday the 13th. I preached once more at St. Just on the first stone of their new society house. In the evening, as we rode to Camborne, John Pierce of Redruth was mentioning a remarkable incident. While he lived at Helstone, as their class was meeting one evening, one of them cried with an uncommon tone, "We will not stay here. We will go to a house which was in a quite different part of the town." They all rose immediately and went, though neither they nor she knew why. Presently, after they were gone, a spark fell into a barrel of gunpowder, which was in the next room, and blew up the house. So did God preserve those who trusted in him and prevent the blasphemy of the multitude. Monday the 15th, we walked an hour near the seashore at Cubert, among those amazing caverns which are fully as surprising as Pool's Hole or any other in the peak of Derbyshire. Some part of the rock in these natural vaults glitters as bright and ruddy as gold. Part is a fine sky blue, part green, part enameled, exactly like mother of pearl, and a great part, especially near the holy well, which bubbles up on the top of a rock and is famous for curing either scorbutic or scrofulous disorders, is crusted over wherever the water runs with a hard white coat like alabaster. Tuesday the 23rd, we walked up to Glastonbury Tower, which a gentleman is now repairing. It is the steeple of a church, the foundation of which is still discernible. On the west of the tower there are niches for images, one of which, as big as the life, is still entire. The hill on which it stands is extremely steep and of an uncommon height, so that it commands the country on all sides as well as the Bristol Channel. I was weary enough when we came to Bristol, but I preached till all my complaints were gone, and I had now a little leisure to sit still and finish the notes on the New Testament. Wednesday, November 5th, Mr. Whitfield called upon me. Disputings are now no more. We love one another and join hand in hand to promote the cause of our common master. Macbeth and Thunder at Drury Lane. Monday the 17th. As we were walking toward Wapping, the rain poured down with such violence that we were obliged to take shelter till it abated. We then held on to Gravel Lane, in many parts of which the waters were like a river. However, we got on pretty well till the rain put out the candle in our lantern. We then were obliged to wade through all till we came to the chapel yard. Just as we entered it, a little streak of lightning appeared in the southwest. There was likewise a small clap of thunder and a vehement burst of rain, which rushed so plentifully through our shattered tiles that the vestry was all in a float. Soon after I began reading prayers, the lightning flamed all round, and the thunder rolled just over our heads. When it grew louder and louder, perceiving many of the strangers to be affrighted, I broke off prayers after the collect. "Lighten our darkness, we beseech thee, O Lord," and began applying, "The Lord sitteth above the water flood, the Lord remaineth a king forever." See Psalm 29:10. Presently the lightning, thunder, and rain ceased, and we had a remarkably calm evening. It was observed that exactly at this hour they were acting Macbeth in Drury Lane, and just as the mock thunder began, the Lord began to thunder out of heaven. For a while it put them to a stand, but they soon took courage and went on. Otherwise it might have been suspected that the fear of God had crept into the very theater. Friday, December 12th, as I was returning from Zor, I came, as well as usual, to Moorfields, but there my strength entirely failed, and such a faintness and weariness seized me that it was with difficulty I got home. I could not but think how happy it would be, suppose we were ready for the bridegroom,